science, now called Orbital ATK, that uses the Cygnus spacecraft. They fly on the Antares rocket, and now they fly on the Atlas V, which they did last time, and they're going to do again this time in another month or two. They could use two different rockets. SpaceX Dragon is going to be used in the Falcon 9 on a permanent basis. So what happened was they said, well, we're going to need more flights because the this is going to go on the space station 2 at least 2024. So they came out with CRS 2, and many, many billions of dollars. I was glad to see Sierra Nevada and NASA also got chosen. So they're going to keep SpaceX, they're going to keep Orbital ATK, and now they've taken Sierra Nevada. Sierra Nevada is the one that I talked about probably many years ago, the Dream Chaser spacecraft. Originally designed to carry astronauts, they since have redesigned it just for cargo for now. The reason for that is during the crew contract award last year, Boeing got their contract for the CST-100, now called the Starliner, and also Dragon, the Dragon crew version by SpaceX was also chosen for crew. Now, Sierra Nevada, they said, well, we're going to continue on. We're going to be building this. We'll find a way to get this thing into space. Let me drop it. So they redesigned Dream Chaser for cargo. So they decided, well, we've got to be able to fit this inside an Atlas V rocket. The wings, they have back wings. It's like a mini space shuttle, that's what it looks like, you know. But the wings, they fold up now in the back, big wings. And this way they were able to fit in a 5-meter bearing on top of the Atlas V rocket. So this thing's going to be launched up. The bearing will come off. That will expose the Dream Chaser. The wings will open up. And then behind the wings now, they're going to have this cargo trunk piece attached to it, which they'll be able to carry external supplies, external cargo to the space station. Now, on the inside, they'll be pressurized stuff, and they'll have unpressurized stuff on the outside. And then also attached to that cargo section behind the Dream Chaser, they're going to have solar panels opening up to provide electricity to supply the spacecraft until it gets to or leaves the space station. So you'll be able to leave these things attached a month at a time to either unload or load cargo. The good thing about Dream Chaser is it doesn't get destroyed when it goes back down to Earth. Although the back cargo piece with the solar panels, they can load that up with trash, and when this thing is flying back to Earth, that piece will disconnect, burn up in the atmosphere, but the space plane, the Dream Chaser, will come back and land on a runway and be able to relaunch again, all reusable. So that's pretty cool. It'll be Sierra Nevada with Dream Chaser. It'll be SpaceX with the cargo Dragon, and will be Orbital ATK with the Cygnus vehicle. Then we have other ways of supplying the space station as well, but that's the American side. Back to you, Dick.
I think we're still on schedule for 2022 or 2024, continuing to use the International Space Station. By the current intense contracts, whatever, the total number of cargo runs that bring up raw materials, consumables, I'm guessing there's about, what, 5 or 6 missions, cargo runs per year to bring up the consumables like food, water, oxygen. Is that roughly the number, Paul? WS2N, K2RIW?
In about 12-month span, you have an average of five American missions going. be in the future as well. And, you know, you can take any 12-month block, and you can, I mean, you might have four, you might have six, you know, but the average is going to be about five. And depending on the needs, you know, is it going to be a requirement that they're going to bring up another component, another space telescope to attach to the truss of the space station? Yeah, then they'll have a, you know, they'll bring it up with Dreamchaser, and they'll use the unpressurized module, plus on the inside they'll have, you know, supplies, food, and it could carry quite a bit, up to 12,000 pounds, so that's even bigger than the HTV. The HTV is the cargo spacecraft that's sent up by Japan. Japan is involved with this as well. They're one of the partners for the International Space Station. So the HTV brings up roughly 10,000 pounds. So, now the good thing about Dream Chaser, as well as Dragon, Dragon comes back down for now and lands in the water. Dream Chaser, of course, will land on land. We will fly back to Florida. But they advertise that they could land anyway. If they want to land in Kennedy Airport, they could do it. So they don't need to worry about fumes like the space shuttle. Remember, the space shuttle used to land, and they used to be out there with, looked like spacesuits, with fans and everything blowing it down. They don't have to do that with Dream Chaser. So we drop it. Bring good science down. You know, you probably launch from the International Space Station, be down in three and a half hours. Scientists will be able to get their bacteria out or whatever they're studying very quickly, instead of launching from the space station and wind up in the ocean like Dragon right now. And that's a long return by the time they get their science back. But if they don't need to worry about, you know, if it's not time restraint, yeah, they can make it a Dragon flight and bring stuff back that way. Now, in this contract, Dragon is also telling NASA, by the way, in the future, we're going to land on land, too. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see them landing in White Sands, New Mexico, or Utah, not the distant future, bringing stuff back to land as well. Just that, you know, Dream Chaser can bring it right back to Florida if they want. Cygnus and the HTV by Japan, they go up and they bring up a lot of stuff as well. You know, 10,000 pounds, the average for them. But you can't bring anything back. The disposable units, they both burn up in the Pacific Ocean, just like the Progress by Russia. So it's interesting, between these missions and eventually the manned missions with Boeing, Starliner and the Dragon crew vehicle, it's going to be real cool in the future. Back to you, Dick. This is WS2N, space portion of the TechNet.
So roughly five missions per year bring up consumable materials, oxygen, water, food, and other materials. If something went wrong so that launches could not be made for a period of time, how much consumables are in reserve, Paul? Do they have enough oxygen, water, and food to last for, let's say, 4 months? If no launch can be made for 4 months, they wouldn't run out of consumables with the six cosmonauts on board, astronauts on board? I'm making some guesses here. WS2N, K2RIW.
Yeah, it was 4 to 6 months, and, you know, of course they could stretch that if they had to. With the problem last year, actually, the end of 2014 through mid 2015, you had three problems. You had, first you had Orbital ATK, at the time it was Orbital Science before they merged with ATK, launched the Cygnus spacecraft to the space station from Wallops Island, Virginia, from their Eastern Spaceport, and that thing blew up not too far above the spaceport, destroyed the Cygnus cargo vehicle, and took out a good portion of the launch site that all had to be rebuilt. And so, you know, you had that problem, and followed by the Russians with the progress that they launched out, and nothing got caught onto the, didn't disconnect properly from the second stage, and that went spinning wildly and burnt up in the atmosphere. And then you had SpaceX soon right after that, in the end of June, when we dropped it. With the Falcon 9 they launched, and they were bringing up supplies and the IDA, the International Docking Adapter, that they were going to attach to the space station. Very important thing, because without that, you're not going to be able to eventually dock with using the American spacecraft that I've been talking about. So that was the first one that was supposed to go up, and there's another one that's scheduled to go up as well. We'll have two docking ports. That thing blew up. But, it's a consideration. And, you know, they knew they had two companies. I think it was part of their, one guy made a reference to it, you know, during the press conference. And, you know, it kind of was in there that, you know, for their discussion. Let's have a third one. And not only that, it's stream chasing. You can bring stuff right back to an airport. So each one has its own good capabilities, but it does put another guy on, you know, another company able to do that on the drop. Surprised to find that one out. And you said six people. Once you have their Boeing Starliner going up with a capability, usually up to four people, or Dragon with the same amount of people. Once you have that on a regular basis, they'll be leaving seven people on board the space station instead of six. Right now, you always have six. You'll have seven, which will double the output of the science that's produced on the space station. Go from about roughly 40 hours of science to 80 hours of science per week. Back to you, Dick. WS1.
Yeah, one way of looking at this is that each human being, not doing heavy work, just sitting idly in a theater seat, so to speak, is giving off heat 450 BTUs per hour, giving off heat at 130 watts is the rate at which you're giving off heat. And all of that is coming from, you have oxygen going in, the food being metabolized, the water being mixed with your food, and so the metabolism process is creating energy and heat, 130 watts of heat, 24/7. If you're alive and well, if you're doing heavy exercise, that number gets multiplied. That energy has to come from somewhere. If a person is not hibernating, and very few human beings have ever gone to hibernating, I think your basal metabolism when you're sleeping only goes down a little bit from that 130 watt number. So you have to have consumables on board that can supply 130 watts of energy. We can calculate that into calories. It's probably something like 1500 calories, kilocalories, have to continuously be flowing into that human being. Now that's just the solid food, the 1500 calories. We got to figure out what happens to the oxygen he's consuming. Let me drop it. So all of that has to be continuously supplied if those human beings are going to be alive. So therefore, it isn't too difficult to look in the stock room and find out how much stuff you've got and what are you going to run out of first. If you're going to run out of oxygen first, that's pretty serious. If you're going to run out of water, that's fairly serious. If you're going to run out of food, that's not quite as serious. The value of three, which is often used when it comes to survival situations, you can live without oxygen for roughly 3 minutes, rough number. You can live without water for 3 days. You can live without food for 3 weeks. So there's got to be a continuous flow of oxygen first, water second. There's got to be that much in the storeroom. And I think you're saying something like 4 to 6 months of reserve is always there. And I guess if that reserve starts getting down to the small numbers, let me drop a quick. And if you have reason to believe that you're not going to be able to make a launch real soon to bring up new consumables, I guess then it would be time for, is it two or three astronauts to climb into a Soyuz and come back down to Earth? I think that's the plan of action, isn't it, Paul? WS2N, K2LIW.
Yeah, and there was a lot of stuff up there. And everything, food, water bags, clothes, everything has got an RFID tag. So, you know, they can go into an area that's jam-packed full of stuff and find stuff pretty quick. You know, I mean, it's all logged. Mission Control knows where everything is, but it helps them find it when they go in there with their RFID reader. The lifeboat situation, yeah, you always have to have, you know, a seat for somebody that's up there. So right now there's two Soyuz spacecraft, manned spacecraft attached to the space station. So if there's a problem, six people can get out. And the reason they're going to allow seven in the future is because Starliner by Boeing or the Dragon crew vehicle will most likely carry a, you know, up to four people up there at a time. But when it's attached to the space station, you could leave it there for 200, 250 days. These things are designed to stay there. Just like the Soyuz craft, they go up there and they stay there for, you know, half a year or more. And that's what Dragon will do and Starliner will do. And you'll have, you know, sea capability for everybody to get back to there.
What is the reason why Soyuz or Dragon is not left for more than 6 months? Is there something on board that wears out the ball to head?
I think they're allowed 230 days, plus, you know, a little bit more after that, in case you can't disconnect right away for some reason. But, yeah, they have a lifespan, and that's why Starliner and Dragon crew have to have that capability. And most of your missions are going to be usually around 6 months anyway. So that's why they need that, at least their around 200-day capability, which we go up for about 6 months. So, yeah, that's what they're built for. You know, all the fuel and everything that's in there, the hydrazine fuel and the rockets, and, you know, they can stay for a long time. But, you know, the valves and everything, they want to... They know it has a certain lifespan to it. They don't want to go past that. And that's why Scott Kelly, he's up there for a year, and so is his partner, Mikhail Kornienko from Russia. He's up there for a year as well. And, you know, the spacecraft he came up with is long gone. He's going back on a different one. He outlived the spacecraft, so did Kornienko. Back to you, Dick.
Two transmissions ago, you said some magic words, Paul. They recognized all of these consumables by way of the RFID tags, and they've got an RFID reader. Of all of your investigation, of all of the photographs of the space station, have you ever seen the actual RFID reader? The reason I'm asking that is there is a particular company in the United States that is considered the major producer of RFID handheld portable readers. I worked for that company for 10 years, and almost every single one of those antennas on that RFID reader I was involved in. So, do you know of anything that'll show you a picture of the RFID reader? The reader I was involved in has a very distinct shape. And so, if you could show me a picture of it, I'd know immediately if it's the one that I worked on. If so, there may be a piece of my hardware up on that space station, called WS2N, K2RIW.
It was handheld. It had a wide front. I would say it was about a half inch thick and maybe, I don't know, it looked like about 2.5 inches wide. But it wasn't being held by an astronaut. It was being held by R2. R2 is a robot. I mean, that's his name, R2. There's an R5 being built for Mars now, but R2 is onboard station. His body was up there for, I guess, 2011, you know, the top part of him. And then recently, Dragon bought up some legs. So now he's got legs. And he's going to go around someday and use this thing. So I saw it. He had it in his hand, you know. It's not mobile yet, you know. They have to send up the software and everything. And eventually, he might be mobile. Maybe someday in the future, they you ever looked into, before they moved the multi-purpose module, that was the one that they used, it was like the basement, and it was stuffed full of stuff when we dropped it.
Are you sure, Paul, that it was an RFID reader, not a barcode reader? Many of these portable readers for RFID are combined. They've got a red light-emitting diode for a barcode reading, which is good as long as you can see the tag. The nice thing about RFID is 10 or 15 feet away, you can find that tag even though you can't see it. So you're fairly sure it was an RFID reader? And if so, describe the front of it, if you remember seeing the front of it. Over to you, Paul, K2RIW.
Yeah, it was actually in a video, and the robot had it in his hand. Knowing us, it's both, you know. But they definitely said everything has an RFID tag in there. And they could go into, like, the multi-purpose module before it was moved. I mean, these are big modules. It's, you know, maybe 30 feet long, or not quite, probably about 26, 28 feet long, and, you know, 14 feet in diameter. It's a big room. And in that, they stuffed everything. And one astronaut went inside there in the video, and I don't know, I would need some kind of a detector. Everything looked the same. It looked like it was all white bags attached to the wall with straps. I want to know which way it was up. So they must have some kind of a detector. Now, not a close-up view. It was in the robot's hand, but I'll research it. Maybe I'll come up with something.
Yeah, the nice thing about an RFID interrogator, RFID reader, is that you go into the room. Maybe this room is 25 feet long, 15 feet in diameter. Take this thing in your hand, which has a directional RF antenna on it, with 6 dB of gain, 85 degrees of beam width. You wave this thing around in the room, and you told it on the control panel, I'm looking for RFID tag number 951. And now it goes and scans all the RFID tags in the room, and when you aim that thing at tag number 951, it'll beep at you. It says, aha, I found it. And as you get closer to the tag, it'll beep louder and faster. So you know when you're going in the right direction. So you could have a completely random scattering of material in that room with a particular RFID tag. But you want that particular piece of material. And if you know what RFID tag number you're looking for, that reader will find it for you. So did you see them doing that kind of an operation, waving it around until it beeped back at them, and then they went in that direction to pick up that item? Over to you, Paul, K2LIW.
Oh, no, I didn't see anybody doing anything. Like I said, the robot had this thing, and he wasn't going anywhere with it. Yeah. I think they're a long way from really releasing this thing and letting them run around the space station. I wouldn't want them hitting any buttons or knocking any computers off the wall or anything, but right now it's just located in one position. So, and then they have a duplicate down on Earth. Maybe that was the one that had I think that might have had the detector in its hand. It's duplicating what they have in space. I think that's the scene that they had. It was a video, so it goes by quick. But I know they have one up on board because right now the astronauts use it. You know, they go into, let's say, Cygnus to unload it. That's attached now. And I'm sure they probably find things very quickly with that. And it takes them a long time to unload 10,000 pounds of stuff and bring it through the hatch. But, you know, that thing went up there, a month and a half ago, and it's still attached. And it was supposed to go back in the beginning of January. They're going to keep it until probably the end of February. And for the reason of bringing stuff back, as much as you think the astronauts are consuming stuff, you know, they have to get rid of it. They get rid of thousands and thousands of pounds every time one of these cargo vessels leave. And Cygnus is one of the ones that get burnt up over the Pacific, just like Progress. And by the time this thing leaves, they'll have a couple of thousand pounds of waste, garbage, that's going to be in that thing. So they leave it there as long as possible to trash can. Back to you, Dick.
Now, most of these RFID readers look like a small handheld computer, a little bit like the old-fashioned Casio Texas Instrument, Hewlett-Packard, except the front end of them has got a very wild-looking object on it. Although you only saw it from a distance and very briefly during that video, did you get any view at all of what the front end of this portable handheld RFID reader looked like, even if it was being held by a robot or a human being? Do you remember, is there any way you can describe what you saw as the front end of that device that was the RFID reader? Over to you, Paul, K2RIW.
Now the handle is in its hand, and that comes up and then goes on a 90 degree angle. So if you're holding your hand, you know, with your fist in front of you, and you're looking at the handle, you know, vertically, the front part of it, you know, goes on a 90 degree away from your eyes, and now you're looking at that, and it flares out, you know, it looks like I would describe it as a triangle going out, where it's wider, like, you know, a gun stays straight like a barrel. Well, this gets wider, and probably about 2 inches wide, and then maybe a half inch thick. So whatever's in there, a little dipole or something.
Did he see a keypad on it, Dick?
Probably in his hand. So that's what it looked like, real quick. And they even were kidding around, talking about it, you know. Is that thing on stun, you know? You know, like from Star Trek or something, you know. You know how these videos are from NASA. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, the thing in his hand, where the object comes out at a right angle, it's called the pistol grip. So the pistol grip is in his hand. His finger is on the trigger, which turns it on and tells it when to read. John is asking, did you see a keyboard? But maybe the keyboard was at right angles to you. You might not have seen that. So he's got this pistol grip. He's got the 90 degree standby. I got to sneeze with this cold. He's got this right angle between the pistol grip and the rest of the body of the computer, so to speak. And then I think you said the front end was a couple of inches wide. And did you see a planar device in the front end that was black in color with folded down edges, so to speak? Was there any kind of an unusual looking object on the front end of this reader, a couple of inches in front of the pistol grip? Over to you, Paul, K2RIW.
It just looked like a flat, very narrow, you know, like I said, maybe probably 3/8 of an inch wide, maybe 2.5 inches at best long. So let's call it a triangle, and that would be the face of it. And black, you know, just a black screen, you know, like your LCD screen, you know, when it's off. They didn't have it on, so I didn't see any lights coming out of it. So, you know, I'm not going to say it was a barcode reader. It just was there, you know. And it went by quick. We're looking at, you know, staring at the thing. If I still looked at it for 5 seconds, it's a lot, Dick, you know. But I'll try to find the video again, and you know, I'm sure it was on YouTube. Hubble wasn't one of the ones. It might have been one of the documentaries that they show. They show so many documentaries. Then if it's on that, I can't stop it. But I'll just pay attention when it goes by a little bit more. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, if you could mail me the URL of that, I'd really appreciate it. I'd like to see that. Because I think there's a 50-50 chance a piece of my hardware is up on that space station. Because at one time, the major manufacturer of RFID readers was the company that I worked for. Whenever I go to the checkout counter in supermarkets and clothing stores and whatever, 50% of the time, the barcode reader, the RFID reader, usually it's a barcode reader, is built by the company I used to work for. So it's kind of fun to see those things. Do we have anyone else with any further questions about space or anything else that has occurred up till tonight? getting down to the last 18 minutes of the TechNet. And so, thank goodness we didn't have any really wild subjects tonight. K2RIW listening. Anybody have any further questions or comments? Give me a call, let us right now.
About anything?
Within reason, as long as it's a subject that's usually of interest to ham radio operators that are not incarcerated. Over to you, Rich.
I'll be listening to the rest of the night, John. So, I may have answered this question on a previous TechNet, but, you know, that's okay. My memory slips from time to time. I'm looking for a company or some sort of manufacturing place that makes plastic insulators. I'm looking for something like about maybe half inch to three quarter inch wide, 2 inches long, and maybe eighth inch thickness. I'm looking for something like this that will also be able to use that, you know, obviously be used outside to separate wiring on an antenna. And I don't want to go out and buy egg inflators because the amount I need is going to become cost prohibitive. So I'm looking for something that's fairly cheap as far as a source of a company manufacturer, something that makes plastic, you know, like I described in size. Anybody ever heard of a company that makes something like that? Back to you.
McMaster Car. Yeah, give us some words on that, John. What have you seen, what size, what's your guess as to the price of what you've seen in McMaster Car? Over to you, John.
Yeah, Dick, got a great catalog. If you get the catalog, they're on web also, and they make nylon, they make Teflon, and rods and bars and anything like that. Buy a 5-foot rod and cut them up and drill holes in them, make all kinds of insulators. Excellent stuff.
Joe, would you be able to take a sheet of plexiglass of the right thickness and cut it up into the shapes that you want? Over to you, Joe.
I missed the name of the company.
Yeah, he said the catalog was McMaster Car. He didn't name a company. John, do you happen to know the name of a company that was shipping these materials in the McMaster Car catalog? Over to you, John.
Dick, I don't know who manufactured the item. They vend it, though. They're the vendors for the company. But if you go on the website, you could probably find out.
How about an inch and a half PVC, Dick? I use that all the time. You know, pipe.
Yeah, PVC is reasonably good at ultraviolet protection. Comes in fairly nice length, any diameter you like. Small number of wall thicknesses. And cutting off lengths of that and drilling holes in it, would that possibly solve your problem, Joe? Go ahead.
That's what I do, Dick. Exactly that. It's possible, but I think that stuff would be a little maybe more PVC piping, like in you buy lengthness at Home Depot. It might be a little cost prohibitive. And then I gotta sort of cut the thing the size. I'm looking for something that's sort of like almost pre-made, like a piece of, you know, like a plastic stock. Something that'll be, you know, UV resistant. I might need about maybe 50 of these pieces, maybe more, depending on how you space these things out when they get done. I have a priced PVC pipe, even on a small adapter. I was looking for something flat because I would basically want to hang one thing under another. Yeah, piping might work, but I thought of, you know, looking for another source first.
Quick comment?
PVC, any length I want, I don't know, about $1 a foot from Ace Hardware. They'll give you anything, you know, 1 foot, 2 foot, then you just cut little rings, you know, little 1 or 2 inch rings, whatever you want, and that's my insulated. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, pick up John in a second. Paul, are you saying that small diameter PVC pipe is $1 a foot? I don't think it's that expensive. Now back to you, Paul.
Got an inch and a half pipe. So, yeah, I mean, you can get the cheap stuff, the smaller stuff, but, I mean, if you want good insulators, you got an inch and a half, scheduled 40, and cut any length you want, you know. Mine are probably 3/4 of an inch thick. I drill a bunch of little small holes with a Dremel tool and put wires through them, twist them around, whatever I want to do. I can put ropes on the other end if I want to wire on one side, rope through the hole setup. No problem. But I always smooth out the inside, you know. ream it out with a Dremel tool. That way the rope doesn't get caught on the edge on the inside and cut itself.
The insulators you made, that pole, is that how you made open wire line?
D2IS coming.
And my 80-meter dipoles up like that. I even have an extra set of insulators for my G5RV Junior. They're insulators there, but then I put mine on with rope in between that. Yeah, I go nuts with that stuff. Thank you.
Okay, we got John and Bill in that order. John, KC2WGB, go right ahead.
Dick, something that was very cheap, almost free, which worked very well, were old milk crates. They had all different size of lattice work there. You cut them out. They come like 2 inches long. You can make beautiful pieces. You know, punch a few holes in that and make all kinds of insulators.
I think things that are called milk crates are now being sold by a company called Staples. Is that true, John?
Yes, they sell them as file holders. But, you know, you can just get them at any deli store. Maybe the guy will want 50 cents because that may be the deposit on it, something like that. But I've used them and they work well, and they're very strong.
I used to use WS2M. You'd like this.
What did you use, Paul?
I don't use them anymore. Actually, well, they're still attached to my field day dipoles, but because it was small, I used to take the bottles. You know, you take a half a liter bottle and just take a hacksaw and you cut off the end piece. Now you have this threaded piece. So around the outside, I would take the wire, and then the rope through the center. So you had a threaded on the, threaded part on the outside. You just twisted it. It stayed on there real good. You know, thin wire. You know, it was like bell wire that I was using for the dipoles. But the ends of the caps. You take the cap off and you just cut the thread off right where it meets the bottle. It was great. Back to you, Dick.
Let's see what Bill's got to do on this one. Bill, have you made up insulators, AC2IS, K2LIW?
Yes, here. I just wanted to mention that there was another outlet called Granger Industrial Supply. They're located at One Deer Park, One Park Drive in Melville, New York, and they have other addresses around. And also wanted to say that the video of the SpaceX landing was pretty spectacular. It looked like a perfect landing right on the X mark on the floating barge. And then slowly the thing tips over. It's amazing to me how they figured it would stand up considering the rough seas that the barge was in. But it's pretty clear that there was a landing leg failure involved. Perfect landing, though, otherwise. AC2IS.
What site did you see that on, or is it on all the sites?
KKUPS comment.
Go ahead, Rich. KKUPS, Rich, what have you used for homebrew insulators? Over to you, Rich.
By the way, I'm not using these as insulators per se, as to hang a dipole from the ends. I want to just hang dipole elements, one underneath another, that's the intended purpose of this, so that's why I'd like it to be flat and not have a lot of wind exposure to it, as far as size, if I can help it. Just minimize the wind loading.
Understand, Joe. Let's see if Rich has come back. KTUPS, K2RIW, go ahead, Rich.
Did you copy me now, KTUPS?
We are copying you now, Rich. Go right ahead.
My comment was two things. That I've used, my friends have used PEX tubing, which is a flexible plastic, fairly flexible anyway, tubing that they use for in-floor heating instead of copper pipes now, and that holds up well outside. But the real cheap thing, if you want to get as cheap as you can get, is kitchen cutting boards, plastic kitchen cutting boards. So you don't cut your counter up. You go to the dollar store, you can pick one up and make several dozen insulators or just whatever you want out of that for a buck.
how wide, how long, how thick, how many dollars. Over to you, Rich, K2UPS, K2RIW.
Well, they come in all different sizes and shapes and thicknesses. It depends on what you find in a store. I mean, the bulk of them are usually kind of like a milky white, similar to a milk container, which is another good source of strips of plastic. They come in different colors. I've seen red ones and green ones and yellow probably and black even. So you're just going to shop around. But even if you pay $3 or $4 for it, your cost per insulator is going to be really low because you can make quite a few from one board. They make small ones and they make really big ones. So it's really easy to cut. Not quite sure the material. They may make them out of different materials. But it's a soft plastic, but it's certainly easy. You can cut and drill through it with no trouble. You can buy them anywhere.
I have the perfect thing for Joe.
Rich, would I be able to cut that cutting board with a good sized pair of tin snips? Over to you, Rich.
I don't think you could do it that way. You'd probably mangle the heck out of it. But any kind of saw would do it. I mean, even a coping saw, hacksaw, anything like that will cut through it. Some of the thinner ones, if you have like a hot wire cutter, you might even be able to do that. But I would not recommend trying to do it with tin snips. I think that may not work out too well for you.
I may be wrong when I call it tin snips. I own a tool that looks a little bit like a pair of scissors, but they are 5 or 10 times the thickness, length, width, the 5 times beefier than a pair of scissors. And boy, can they cut sheet metal. They don't have that funny bend of tin snips. This is a pure, very large pair of scissors, and I could very easily cut through galvanized steel with these, so to speak. Over to you, Rich, K2RIW.
Toronto. I don't think that would work too well, but I'd like to see you try. I mean, these the cutting boards are typically probably 3/8 of an inch, 1/2 inch thick. Maybe the really large ones that would, say, for cutting a turkey on might be even thicker than that. But, you know, shop around, go to the dollar stores and those kind of places. You can find them. I mean, even in a supermarket, in a produce section, they even sell them there. You don't have to go to a specialty store.
There's the missing information. You said 1/2 inch to 3/4 of an inch thick. I assume it only had to be thick enough to make sure the knife wouldn't go through it and cut my tabletop. I didn't know it's that thick. John, you had a comment, and then there was somebody else also. KC2WGB, K2RIW in the net.
Yes, Dick. I think I found the perfect thing for Joe. If he looks at the PVC Venetian blinds, the narrow ones, there's the strips, perfect size, just drill holes in them, and that's the end of it. Now, Rich just called me with a comment. He said there's a company called 73cnc.com. You go to that site, they sell all kinds of insulators very cheap.
Do you need a fill on any of that, Joe? Mr. RYY, K2RIW?
The last comment was 73cnc.com. That website will have plastic items on it, correct?
Yeah, repeat that name again, John, just to be sure.
73cnc.com. That's from N2EO. He said they have them, and they're relatively inexpensive. But I think the Venetian blind slats would do perfect for your situation, Joe.
They might be. I have to go to a Venetian blind place. I want something thicker than a Venetian blind. I want these things to be able to be, you know, rigid enough to be able to take, you know, the stress of wind loading, but not, you know, load down as much as you know, getting blown around the wind. I know you're talking about unless I found like a thicker type of blind, something a little, maybe a little more modern than what I'm looking at. But okay, I copied that.
Juliet India, a whiskey.
I think we got 2 minutes, Dick.
Okay, I heard Julia India Whiskey. I'm going to make a guess that that was VE3JIW. I'm going to make a guess that that was Jim. Go right ahead, Jim.
Thanks, Jim. VE3JIW. Cutting board on a table saw, on a chop saw, a skill saw. And if you want to make donuts out of cutting board, use a hole saw. You get a quarter inch hole in the center, which you can make bigger, and you get the outside diameter of the hole for the hole saw if you want to make washers. Great net, guys. Heard part of it. Bye-bye back to RIW, VE3JIW.
Very fine, Jim. Sounds like you've made insulators in that manner. How many did you make, and what were you using them for, Jim? VE3JIW? Canadian, what do we call it now? The horseshoe area?
Golden horseshoe.
The golden horseshoe. Over to you, Jim. K2RIW.
The internet time. I was making washers to put metal boxes in with standoffs that would, in a commercial kitchen, they want to wash behind the boxes, so... cutting board washers, easy to cut. Ran a whole pile on a table saw to make patterns for cutting out gingerbread houses. So easy to cut, hard to clean up the plastic dust.
Reminds me of when I went into the mass production with my son with pieces of plywood in the shape of boomerangs, and boy, did we fill up our cellar with wood dust. Okay, you guys just heard TechNet number 1,584. Heard the space, 1,585, space report 184. 73, well, we'll be back next week. We'll be discussing more bomb theory. KC2WGB, the tie on the ribbons, K2RIW. Over to you, John.
Okay, Dick, great net. Well, I thank everybody for joining us and for the questions that come in. And I'll repeat my email address for anybody who's interested. Juliet Bravo 5 Oscar at AOL.com. It's also on the QRZ page if anybody's interested. Have fun. Enjoy the hobby. KCWGB is clear.
John, I don't know if you're still listening. WHORYY KTUPS Mobile. Approximately how many linear feet of this insulating strip are you looking for? Because I have a whole mess of fake wood, it's actually plastic, Venetian blind slats. When I bought a bunch for my house, they came way too long, and I had to remove probably about a dozen slats or more from each one. And I got a whole mess of those things in my garage. I think they're probably about 3.5-4 feet long.
The idea of when I'm going to use of this thing is for my ongoing antenna project. Imagine a dipole length of about approximately 80 meters to be able to handle an 80 meter antenna. And I'm going to be hanging other antennas underneath that, like 40 meters, 20, 15, 17 meters, 10 meters, and so forth. Maybe 12 meters, so I have a lot of different size wires that get progressively shorter, but I will need enough insulators to probably keep the spacing about maybe a foot between spacers. So initially, I'll need, like on the top section, 40 meters, I will need quite a few spacers to hang on underneath the 80. Then I'll need less as I go along. The exact footage, I'm going to have to calculate that out, probably calculate how many spaces I need, but what did you say you have? Something that resembles a Venetian blind type of construction?
That's correct, Joe. They are Venetian blind slats. They were made to look like wood. It's a brown plastic. It's got a wood grain in it. They're probably 2, maybe 2.5 inches wide. No, I think about 2 inches wide. So you could rip them down the middle, and if you only wanted them an inch wide, or rip it down twice, to get them a little thinner, and then you can make them any length you want. I believe they're probably about 4 or 5 feet long, something like that. I don't know what type of plastic it is, but I have a bunch of them, and you're welcome to them, if you want. I live in Hicksville. My email is good on QRZ. If you drop me a line or whatever, maybe I can try to take a picture of one of these things when I get home and show you what it is.
Okay, very good, Rich. I'll keep you in mind. I'll look around a little bit and see if something more suitable is out there, but if I don't find anything readily available close to me, I'll keep you in mind. I mean, it's an inch and a half, 2 inches. I mean, I could probably, it just means I'm going to be able to make less of them, but I could still probably use something like that. Basically, I'm looking for something that's fairly strong, fairly rigid, but not going to produce a lot of wind load within itself. I'll just have to see how it goes. Thanks for the offer, and I will look up on QRZ to get your email address.
Okay, Joe, no problem. And I said, I'm not quite sure what type of plastic this is. It's slightly flexible. You can bend it pretty tight before it might snap. You know, maybe it isn't a product that would work, but you're certainly welcome to try. So, but have a good evening. I know it's probably shut down soon or whatever. So I'm still in Pennsylvania here on icy roads. K2UPS Mobile.
Okay, very, very good, Rich. Thanks, Rich, for the offer. Have a good trip. Where are we going? And catch you later. W2YY.
Sampling, so it shouldn't be as high as the recording stuff. Somewhere along the way, we need to figure out a way of recording at a lower sampling rate also.
That's another format. In fact, I sent the company an email to the company to see if they respond to me this time, since I have another thing that says, you know, the same company with once in $10. You know, they have tech support, they have this, they have that, so I asked a few questions. We'll see what happens. But, anyway, MP3, I don't know if I can compress it or not. I think I tried it one time. It came up with a WAV file, which was like 4 times the size, so that was no good. So, I don't know. You have to really look at the options and see what options I have, if it can be, files can be shrunk a little bit. I tried zipping it, but that didn't help. It, you know, maybe made it 90% instead of 100%, so that really didn't help.
Yeah, we may end up having to write our own software. It wouldn't be that difficult. But then we could get down to mono recording, single channel, 16 kilobit, take that to a WAV and then compress it into an MP3, and that would produce a pretty small file.
I have to find another program then. All right, I'm just going to make a hold it. I think it's time to give up on this computer until tomorrow. Then I got to put the programs out. I put the dual video card back in. And downloaded the drivers, and I'm getting an error 43. That means the computer doesn't like the hardware for some reason, and it's just giving me, at least I got it up to 800 by 600 instead of 640 by 480. So that's a little improvement, but it's still not the best screen. So I have to see why Windows is not recognizing that card properly. Maybe I have to go into the BIOS and disable the onboard video card, even though I think this overrides it automatically. That may be a problem also.
Yeah, I always disabled the onboard video because of that. I never quite trust the overriding, but we'll see. So, I'm pulling into the neighborhood here, so I will say adieu. Have a good evening, and I will catch you later. K2YO.
873, it's time to go to bed. K2YO, WB2ZX, and we clear.
Net tonight at 8:30 WQVL repeater system. Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.